Blog Talk Radio.
Smart Sound.
Hello and good evening and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. My name is Don Allen in Studio A. Over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing this beautiful summer evening?
Man, it's been some beautiful weather here in our beloved, quote-unquote, Minnesota North Country, whatever. At the head, Mississippi, at the headwaters and the central. Got to tell you, though, Don, a lot of tension in the communities, if you will, a lot of tension within the black community. A little less than a week ago, near brawl. Well, it got kind of contentious up there. I just don't understand what happened. They brought in all the big experts who were getting paid all kinds of money. This was put on by Justin Terrell, the executive director of the Council on Black Culture Now or whatever.
African Heritage, something like that.
Yeah.
They changed the name.
Now, I was there on the premises, so, you know, if I want to have no one call in and talk about were any one of us there. Yeah, I was there. I was shocked at the rancoredness and volatility and et cetera that took place. I know that some in state government had disagreed with me when I was quoted in the local newspaper here indicating there was volatility in the community following the shooting death on June 23rd of Thurman Blevins, a 31-year-old African-American shot and killed by police in North Minneapolis. But, you know, I thought the folks had their, you know, their plan together. I mean, and man, if you knew how much money that these folks are getting, and it was, I've got to tell you, that was an absolute disaster up there, man. Absolute disaster.
No, I was watching the video of the event, and it was really nutty. I mean, what was going on there, and just the back and forth between people, groups like Mad Dads and other people in the audience. You know, I was looking for a fight to break out, Mr. Edwards. When I was watching,
It came real close. I was watching some of those that were being well-funded, particularly the GVI group, as they are called, the individuals who for the prior three weeks had been discussing how they would handle the situation right after the shooting of Thurman Blevins. They had told the mayor and the governor that they had a handle on this, that these were people that they knew how to deal with, et cetera. I was amazed at the number of people that I saw who were absolutely glued in terror to their chairs. And I said, oh, my God. I said, you're supposed to be the people that's supposed to be dealing with the trauma and mental health conditions and et cetera. And they made no move. Now, at the end of the meeting, you need to know that they had a so-called debriefing of Joey Stevenson, Sasha, Cotton, some of that group. But they seemed to, you know, Don, the appropriate word in that there's so much into trauma, et cetera, they seemed to be shell-shocked.
Yeah.
You know? And then it was even more clear to me that they only knew one of the families, the Blevins family. They did not know the Moore family, which has been here for many years. In fact, just to, you know, for clarity, it was the Reverend Isaac Moore Jr., pastor here for about 15 years, who presided and officiated. And I have to tell you, Don, maybe these folks can take a page from the Moore family and to a lesser degree the Blevins family. But the Moore family really brought about reconciliation in that church Saturday afternoon in North Minneapolis at 1119 Morgan Avenue North. Reverend Isaac Moore really showed tremendous leadership. He had a group of ministers with him. But you know what, Don? It wasn't the traditional ministers, if you know what I mean. You know, now, it came at a time when, and our condolences to the Reverend Jerry McAfee on the passing of his brother, Willie McAfee, a couple days ago, if you will. I was able to give my personal condolences to Reverend McAfee. But there was just a whole host of ministers and things, and Brian Heron and others, you know, who should have been there. I'm talking about at the funeral, at the graveside, et cetera. And I don't know what to think, Don, really, you know, with all the money that has been given to these groups, if you will, to these individuals and et cetera. I just don't understand what the heck happened up there Thursday night.
Yeah, it was, I sent a message over to Justin Terrell via social media and asked him, you know, did he lose control? I mean, what happened at the meeting? And he has yet to get back to me. And it seems like that this particular executive director of the Council of Minnesota's African Heritage is more into restore the vote than to deal with issues in the community that are very important. I know it's an election year. I know he could be viewed as a puppet for the DFL political plantation. And it looks like there should be more coming out of the council. And Mr. Edwards, I don't even think we had a legislative agenda this year out of the council. And, you know, you might attribute that to him just.
I can't envision that, Don, in an election year. I know that their bullet points, if you will, are in place, and they have the necessary sponsors in the legislature and on both the Senate and House side, I would assume. I just can't believe that you're correct all from the right, Mr. Allen.
Yeah.
I just can't envision that.
Well, Mr. Edwards, you know, when I talked to him earlier this year, I said, you know, the old council under Mr. Ed McDonald and Pat with Lawrence had a over $200 million legislative agenda from agriculture to education to housing. I mean, they had a variety of stuff that they really worked meticulously to put together. And says, you ought to take that and run with it. And I don't think he saw the vision.
What was his response?
Well, his response is that he's learning how to do stuff. Maybe this year was not the year that the council would have a legislative agenda.
I thought he brought an action portfolio to the job. Didn't we have him on here about 8 or 9 months ago? He was, you know, educating us on all the things and all the people that he knew.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was, but, you know, floss is floss. And I don't think any real work's being done, and I'm seeing this trap being created where there are certain talking points that are okay to go after, and like this chaotic meeting they had, you know, the council that I knew hasn't had a meeting like that since 2008, where people were screaming at each other, and, you know, there was no organization, no control.
But I'm puzzled by it, Don, is because I'm aware that they had to the governor and then to Drew Evans, the superintendent of the powerful Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, BCA, that they had everything under control. And that's where I was talking about in the beginning of this conversation, because they were talking in terms of who would not be involved, if you will. One of the that I do understand that they undermined it is the commander of the community response group in the Minneapolis Police Department, Commander Charles Adams, the second, if you will. And I was not supposed to really talk about it, but I will have to say it, that at one point there was a group of older African Americans. You know, there we go again with that, you know, we don't need to hear from the elders. There was an older group of African Americans that were, initially being asked to participate in the strategy, as we talked about, the volatile violent summer, et cetera. And the statements that were made, we don't need to hear from, you know, antiques. I mean, you know what I'm saying? And I know there was a whole group of individuals of older African Americans that were cut out of the process, man, in the, let's say, 3 weeks leading up to, and this would have been, you know, basically right after the death of Blevins, with the commissioner, or actually the superintendent of the BCA, and just a group of individuals were just told that they were not welcome, you know. And people like James Burroughs and folks like that indicated that they could handle what needed to be handled. And I saw, well, Burroughs and them weren't even there, but I saw some of these same people, you know, just crumble. Like I said, they were terrified. They were shell shocked. You know, they were cemented to their chairs in a separate. You know, if it hadn't have been for the paramilitary group of Mad Dads. And some fairly good-sized African-American security personnel. I mean, it could have gone, but it you know, the Blevins family was angry, very, very, very angry. And that's why I was so impressed with the Reverend Isaac Moore and his officiating at the funeral this past Saturday. But now there's nothing but silence coming from City Hall and from this group of individuals that were going to deal with the problems of trauma and et cetera, particularly coming off of the Williams killing, if you will. Of course, the Bevins situation. We have other, homicides and deaths that have taken place in the last couple of years. Someone said to me earlier that it appears that that African Americans are just kind of fair game, but I guess we're not really talking about that, Don.
No, we're not. And Mr. Edwards, we do have a call, it looks like. Let me see if I get that caller live on the air here.
Oh, let's go.
Caller,
sure.
You're live on the air. Go ahead. What's your question?
I'm just listening in the queue.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we have someone listening in the queue. That's great. Yeah, Mr. Edwards, I was a little taken back by this whole this meeting and the dysfunction of this meeting and the facilitating and just what was going on, because there's a young guy named Jonathan Mason. I need to make one more point after this, but he had it on Facebook Live broadcasting to the world with thousands of hits of people watching this video.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And there's a conversation between he and Mad Dad that, I mean, this guy is a linguistic genius as far as I'm concerned, because Mad Dad was talking real tough to him, real tough. Get that camera out of my face. You know, move over here, move over there. You know, what you doing? They walked up on him. And he twisted around, and 2 minutes later, he had members from Mad Dad giving him a hug. I said, this boy has a silver tongue. Right
yeah,
here.
I saw all that. Yeah, I saw all that from my seat there in the meeting room.
The trouble we have, I think, in my opinion, Mr. Edwards, this is Don from the right, my opinion, of course, is that this mental health position that, black Minnesotans have, all of them have some kind of mental health issue. That's why, you know, we have poverty and all this other stuff. It is becoming a problem. I see people getting on the bandwagon, and, like, I see posts on social media. Yeah, we got to start the healing. We have to start this process. Same stuff they were talking in 2008. And also, you know, we don't need these old cats in here. We don't, you know, we need some new blood in here. Same things they were doing in 2008, 9, and 10. And as we know, Ms. Edwards, that turns into chaos and nothing gets done, because here we are, 2018, 10 years later, still having the same conversation. And with that, we do have another caller.
Let's see if they want to get in. The lines are open.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on tonight, gentlemen. Been a long time here. I love chiming in. You know, I think that Don, you're absolutely right. I think one of the problems, though, is it's the stigmatism that comes with our people seeking out help for mental incapacitations, or just sometimes having the pressures of the world and not being able to deal with it. And sometimes we lash out with abusing drugs or abusing spouses, children, things of that nature. So I think that we've got to try to work together. And work on admitting and telling our people that it's okay to seek out professional help rather than harming your neighbors or your loved one. And
okay, I'm glad you said that. We're speaking with Jamar Nelson, co-host of Black Republican, Black Democrat on Twin Cities News Talk Radio. Thanks for calling in, and stay on the line because I want to respond to what you just said. Here's the thing.
Yes, sir.
You know, and I think I talked to you about this. I mentioned it. You know, I'm diagnosed with depression and PTSD after getting out of the service. And for a while, for about 4 or 5 years, I took some medication that made me the happiest boy on the block. Okay.
Right.
And they weaned me off of it after 4 years and says, hey, you don't even need this no more. And that's clinical diagnosis. Now, there's a big difference from clinical diagnosis from community diagnosis. Okay.
Right. Absolutely.
What they're doing, in my opinion, for someone who has been diagnosed with depression and things like that is they're laying the missteps, the black-on-black crime, the unemployment, the lack of education on somehow all of a sudden this whole community of dark-skinned people is suffering from mental illness, when in fact this whole community is more likely suffering from the economic stranglehold that people in power, including some of our people that look like us, put on the community and use them as a petri dish for experimentation, for grants, for things like that. Yeah, black people, just like all people, should have the access to say, hey, I'm not feeling right. I'm sleeping all day. I'm up all night, and I need to be functioning better. But that's a skill. That's something that you learn. You learn with a job. You learn with responsibilities. You learn with family. You know, this is not clinical. This is more of a socioeconomic pushing people in that direction that, oh, the reason you're like that, black people in 5541
is because. Mr. Allen on the right, excuse me, Mr. Nelson, no, but Mr. Allen,
yes, sir,
on the
yes,
right,
sir.
Because we talked about this last week, and we really reached out to see if there were callers and opportunity to call in. We were ready to even expand the program by probably another half hour and et cetera. You know, the phone lines, with the exception of a African-American woman who will, you know, reach out for the challenge and et cetera, Ms. Dean, you know, it was kind of quiet and icy. Now, of course, this was the night before an absolute disaster. And here's the thing I say, Mr. Nelson, and to my colleague, Mr. Allen, I repeat again, I was, you know, I in fact went to meetings on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday last week, purposely, to watch, quote-unquote, the great minds, the great organizers of this particular problem, which actually my associate, Mr. Allen, my colleague, if you will, my co-host, actually really became a little emotional last week, and I understood that. And yet, as I sat there, one of the things that I was aware of is I'm looking at people who are sitting on $1.6 million of what is called recast money that came from the Department of Health and also from the Bloomberg Foundation. And for anybody that wants to challenge that one, like happened last summer at the forums at the both of the Marriotts downtown on gun violence. Remember, gentlemen, that was a big topic last year.
It certainly was a big topic.
Everybody was talking. They had different ministers like Reverend Sack and people like that, and they were talking about dealing with the situation until a professor from Yale talked in terms that the greatest group in danger in America right now are white males over 50 who are committing suicide left and right. But anyways, I'm agreeing, but at the same time, I think it is paramount that we be honest and upfront with regards to that this is not the first time we've traveled this road. And Mr. Nelson had conversations with you over the years, Mr. Allen, and you have had conversations, Mr. Allen and I obviously had conversations. And so my question, gentlemen, back to both of you, if you will, what has happened? Because, man, a lot of money has been poured into this community. I mean, I can remember Dr. Cicchetti, who now still presides over, quote-unquote, the mental health management of the black community from one of his fortresses, and that is the facility there on Plymouth Avenue, UROC, if you will, basically, you know, bedding down there in the safety of the University of Minnesota. At what point do we have to recognize that the community has recognized that there's a lot of faking going on?
You know, I think that's an absolute pointed question, Mr. Edwards. Should be calling you Dr. Edwards. but I think, Don, you somewhat glossed over the fact that the things that you mentioned, bruh, can cause mental anguish to our people, and a lot of times it does. If you're broken, poor, and can't provide for your family, you know, that's a stress that becomes a worry, especially if you're married to a black woman who now is demeaning and emasculating you because she's saying that you're less than a man because you're not providing or something of that nature. That becomes a stress, and then he lashes out. Or with a female, sometimes she may lash out being promiscuous. I just think that when we have – the problem is the monies that are always allocated, because a lot of times, again, sometimes, Don, I think that you are – hitting on it, that sometimes it's a misdiagnosis. We have to admit that there's, with our people, a lot of our people suffer from bipolarism, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And until it is diagnosed, sometimes, a lot of times it's diagnosed the wrong way. And so these white folks would then start doping us up with these other drugs, or we start doping up, self-medicating, things of that nature. But Don, we gotta admit the fact that there is a mental problem in our community that is not being addressed. And so what you're saying too was right, Mr. Edwards and Don. When you the problem is our leaders or the people that are in charge of the money that's supposed to be allocated to help our people, that is where both shoes drop, because it's not being divvied out the way it's supposed to. And we should have someone, we should have a huge black advocate making sure that our people are diagnosed the right way with the right mental problems that they have, and not just being doped up because they're black and white folks deem us as angry for whatever reason.
Okay, can we talk just a minute, gentlemen? But go ahead, Mr. Allen. I know you want to respond from the right. Go right ahead.
From the right. I mean, is that the biggest challenge? Yes, we know that. You're absolutely right, Mr. Nelson, that those things, those items you mentioned, can cause stressors that can lead to a severe state of mental illness. But why are we being looked at like crabs in a barrel? Maybe if those 7,000 people in North Minneapolis or in St. Paul or in South Minneapolis, West St. Paul, East St. Paul had sustainable employment, sustainable, you know, education, had those things that they don't have now, the dynamics of the community will change really uniquely. You could take $1.6 million and put a whole bunch of seniors through community college in St. Paul and Minneapolis at MCTC, and you'd see a dramatic shift in the focus, because you'd have people that are learning, that understand the system. See, the problem is these agencies aren't going to come to people with education and say, oh, you guys are mentally ill, or you guys are this, or someone that knows a little bit about a lot. You know, they're not, because we're not going to fall for the okie-doke. We'll say, no, I don't think that's the problem. I think the problem is that I have an EBT card with $200 on it a month. My family eats $1,500 worth of food a month. I've been looking for a job for 3 to 5 weeks. I haven't found a job, or 6 months. And to solve my issues would be first to get a job and have a steady income. You see a lot of this mental health talk go away, but no, they have to keep the machine. They have to keep the machine turning, because those areas where that recast money is going to, I'm saying take the $1.6 million and divide it to the community.
Let me be absolutely clear and concise.
Okay.
Actually, the remaining amount, gentlemen, is $3.4 million. This is a $5 million package, $1 million a year. So $1.6 is still to be spent and has to be spent by actually probably beginning of September. Just think about that, $1.6 million. So that means there's still, you know, everybody needs to do the math. There's still I think, you know, both you gentlemen are certainly on point. But I maintain that this has been a well-designed plan of continued genocide. And last week on this very same program, we began to talk about the following, particularly when we had a young lady call in and she was telling us that the president of the Minneapolis Urban League was allegedly on a committee that was making sure that African Americans were hired for all that construction going on in and around Penn Avenue and Plymouth. And that couldn't be true because some of us had been monitoring that for quite some time, and, you know, there's maybe one or two African Americans that are out there.
Yep.
And
yep.
That's the kind of thing that brings stress, gentlemen, and trauma, and
right.
of course, but the other things that go with that. Now,
right.
we have been asking on this program, you, Mr. Nelson, asked it on your program on the KFAN station, at what point do we begin to prioritize what we think is important? Now, I know that that's where my colleague from the right, Mr. Alvin, is really pushing hard when he talks about jobs, education, decent housing, and et cetera. And now folks have twisted that back on us to some degree by saying, well, see, your concern about that is generated by your mental, quote-unquote, deficiency. And I don't think any of us believe in that, but the fact of the matter is that I'm seeing a community, the African-American community, that is mentally and spiritually, and that's really sad, gentlemen, spiritually being absolutely worn out. They
yep.
just don't see a manifesto. They just don't see a plan of action. And it's tragic, but it's also, gentlemen, very foolish. And I don't want to insult none of the Republicans, but, you know, with that fool in the White House, okay? Ain't no telling what he may push the wrong button, and we will become a bright spot in the universe, you know, of 300 million. You know, light years from now. But that's the part, again, the phone lines are open because, Mr. Nelson, I'm just, and I think you see the same thing on your program, you began to become concerned, but we are actually wearing our people out with telling them about the problem, but yet we really don't have a constructive plan of action.
That's right.
If
that's
you will,
right.
You know.
That's right.
And I see a situation right now. In fact, one of our callers, I think, is going to be trying to get through to us. We have a level, as an example, in Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas City, Kansas, where at least one homicide a day is now taking place. But on the other hand, our African Americans in those two cities are in pitched battles with the police. But because so much time on the Fourth Estate is being spent on talking about the idiot, Donald Trump, that we're not even beginning to get 1/15 of the amount of news, information, and knowledge that we should have so that we can at least have some kind of plan. That's where I'm at, gentlemen. I think at some point maybe we have lost credibility with the common masses, if you will. Notice the term I use, common masses, with regards to do you people, man and woman, clue or a commitment, but when we talk about the money, you know, $5 million was given to this city to deal with this problem, which includes what Mr. Allen has been saying, Mr. Nelson, and that is to enhance and mobilize, you know, more jobs, more education, more opportunity. We all are black men who know a little bit about recreation and et cetera. You know, we had a caller last week that talked in terms that hell, you can't even find a decent park for our children to play
this
in.
This is true. This is true.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is true.
But I kind of been talking filibustering. You know, your thing. And Mr. Allen, I need to check and see if we have any calls, Wade.
Yes, we have a couple calls online here. Stand by, Mr. Nelson, if you'd like. And we have a couple callers.
Yes.
Let's get them. Call, you're live on the air, 7677. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, this is Lisa calling in. Hello,
hey,
can you hear me? Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, well, I was calling because first I wanted to speak with Mr. Edwards. I wanted to make very clear what I said last week about Thor and the president of the Minneapolis Urban League, because you said that what I said could not possibly be true. Now, I want to tell you what is true. He was on the board for Thor. This is what he told me out of his mouth. Okay,
well, first of all, what board are you talking about? What board?
Well, specifically what he told me, I didn't go to asking him the details because I didn't want to disrespect his authority, but that's what he told me, and I took his word for it. And I also want you to know that Thor Construction Company, they did follow up with a call. They called me back after I was on site questioning the African-American employees. They followed up with a call to me, told me that they had a partnership agreement with certain organizations within the community to hire a certain percentage of African Americans in the community. And I did follow up and make the community aware of what was told to me on Facebook. And when I did that on Facebook, there was a construction worker that followed up with that voicemail Facebook message and went to the site at Thor Construction and was hired. So I want you to understand.
You said
when
yeah,
I
sorry.
Tell you when I
you said,
I didn't go
said,
I didn't go
eight,
I didn't
eight,
go
eight
over there to protest.
We can't out talk each other. You
no,
said
no,
eight
I
workers.
Just want to clarify
how many
the truth.
Do you think is working on the project? How many people do you think is working on that project?
Well, no, I'm speaking as to who you think are working. Excuse me. Well, we have
excuse
contract
me.
Compliance. So if Thor was in compliance, then they would have fulfilled
contract
those numbers.
Contract compliance done by who? Monitored by who? Authorized by who? Having the authority
well,
to take
no,
sanctions by who?
Can I please? Well, let me see. This is what we're talking about when we speak of the mental health part. Because you are an elder in our community. I'm calling you had already accused you accused me of being a liar. And I called to just verify what had actually
happened. You're 100,000%
I didn't go
wrong.
Can you please, with
regards to you had a conversation with an individual who told you that they were on a
with
board.
The president,
you can't even
with the president
the
of the Urban League.
But go ahead.
Excuse me,
I said Thor. You see
what I'm talking about when I speak of respecting the community, when we talk about our elders and our younger community.
Let me say this.
We have cliques in our community and we have poverty pimps. Now, when we have cliques in our community and we have poverty pimps, and then we look at who has the best interests of our community. Now, do you have the best interests of our community? Because you speak a lot on what's going on in our community. And I'm surprised that now that I have Mr. Edwards.
Yeah. But okay, I'm listening to you.
I'm telling you the board, by the way,
it would be the Civil Rights Department, okay?
I'm telling you the board. I'm giving you that information right now. His name is Michael Belton. He is the president of the Minneapolis Urban League. He is on the board for Thor Construction.
Michael Belton
is with Juvenile. He's a consultant for the Juvenile Justice Department. I'm talking about Steve Belton, the mayor's husband. Okay, he's on the board for Thor Construction. And when you speak of mental health, let's stop throwing this mental health, because once we have our own people throwing that out, then we have other people coming to capitalize. So when you talk about mental health, who is prepared to receive this money when it comes to talking to our people about their mental health issues? Is anyone on this phone ready to receive that? Because you're constantly throwing the mental health out, but you don't have the certain qualifications to receive the funding when those checks are issued.
Go ahead. No, I'm not a doctor.
You're absolutely right about that. You're not a doctor.
You don't need any of that million. So stop diagnosing our people. Stop doing that.
Lisa, I'll let you speak. Can I speak? I'll let you speak. I'll let you speak. You're right.
Yes.
I'm not going to argue with you. You're absolutely right. I think you're an incredibly smart sister.
Well, as long as I'm not
always,
with Mr. Edwards, because he's just on
and I'm always
else.
Down. And I'm always down to work with you. But let me say this, sis. We absolutely have a mental issue and mental illness going in our community. Let me say this, Lisa. You, I'm sure you do. I know I do. Have several, more than several family members that have probably been undiagnosed with bipolarism or something more serious. The stresses of
is
our
that something to
calculate
off of?
Let me.
Is,
no, no,
is
no, no,
that
no,
something
no.
to write a
wait,
check there?
Wait. Yes.
Is that
say
something
yes.
to write a check
why.
There?
Yes. Yes. This is why, Lisa.
Oh, really?
How?
Well, how many aunties and uncles and relatives do we have that's stepping up to those who are ill? How many do we have? I mean, we have people over 50 that's acting like kids. I mean, how do we know who send me examples of our community?
Well, I'm just saying,
example.
Though.
You know what? Hey,
a Republican or a Democrat? Which one? Okay.
It don't matter. Let's. We have a whole.
Who
set
me
an
example? A Republican or a politician?
Hey,
yeah, I'm done.
Lisa,
I just wanted to verify
Lisa,
what
Lisa,
I had
Lisa,
to say about thought construction.
Don't ever call me
a liar, okay? Because I want to call in and clear it up. Yes.
No problem. Thank you for the call.
You made that up so you
could involve yourself in
the conversation.
Have a nice evening. Have a nice evening.
Yeah, I don't know what show she was listening to, but wasn't nobody co-signing the mental illness over here on the right? And Ms. Harris, we have another caller here. A caller, 816 area code. Go ahead. Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. What's happening?
Yeah, I wanted to ask Mr. Edwards a little bit more about the Furman Blevins case, if I could.
Because
I kind of wanted to – I had several questions for you, but one was, has the coroner's report come out yet, and do they – know exactly like how many times he was shot, and
that's an interesting question, sir.
Yeah.
The coroner's report has been issued; has not been made public.
Oh,
there are some who are saying that, and you have to give validity to it now. We had the funeral on this past Saturday. Mm-hmm. Some are saying that he was shot 14 times, 8 times mm-hmm. in the body, including many times in the back. And 6 times in the head. Now, you would initially think that, okay, you know, advocates and other people are just trying to keep the crowd, the maddening crowd, fired up and et cetera. But a strange thing happened because both of the families, the Moore family and the Blevins family, the father of the deceased is Furman Moore. And, of course, the mother was a Miss Blevins. The casket was never opened. And, you know, gentlemen, irrespective of what some people say as they scream and holler, et cetera, if you have long experience and know what you're talking about, when you have a situation in which there's been a violent confrontation and death, and the coroner does not indicate such things as how many times the person was, you know, shot or beaten or et cetera with regards to the cause of death, and the casket remains closed, you begin to give validity to the contentions that are being made. And I'm really uneasy about this because the body cam. And it's too bad that some of the folks that are screaming and hollering aren't out there screaming and hollering at the mayor. But let me just say this to you, sir, from your 816 number. The county attorney and the BCA, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, who's direct-handed, as he is called here in the state of Minnesota, actually helped to provoke a confrontation that allowed the superintendent to walk out of the meeting, okay? And one of the things that happened, and I want to give you the quick dates, if you will, is that the death of Mr. Blevins took place on the 23rd day of June. By the 26th, the mayor of the city of Minneapolis, first-termer, had been saying that he was going to release both the body cam, not many of these folks paid any attention to the dash cam, which is on two of the first police cars to turn up the alley after the shots were fired by two officers who were on foot. And so the mayor had said on the 25th, 26th, 27th of June that he was going to release the cams, the body cams and the dash cam. The county attorney, who is up for re-election in this county, in this state, pulled the damnedest stunt that you want to see, but he's used to doing this. He's very proficient at it. He made the announcement that, oh, by the way, I'm going to subpoena and bring in for questioning 39 police officers who were at the scene. Now, you have to understand, there were only two police officers in that alley who fired on Mr. Blevins, who is now deceased. Okay, only two. Now, he did the same thing in the case of Muhammad North, which everybody was all upset with, et cetera. There were only four people in that alley. One was deceased. That was Justine. There was another Caucasian on a bicycle riding through the alley. He gave no statement that contradicted the statement by Muhammad Nord's partner, who was in that vehicle the night that shot was fired. But what the county attorney did is went out and subpoenaed 50 police officers, if you will, to come in and give testimony, and that took him over a month. This one is going to take about the same thing. So what I'm saying to you, sir, from where you're calling from, is that they are in a wait-and-see game, and they really feel that they can outweigh the African-American community. And I'm afraid that that's what's going to happen. So to your specific question, the coroner's report has never been publicly released. The family, the Moore family, if you will, who the father of the deceased is a member of the Moore family, very large family, very prominent, religious type family, have obtained an attorney by the name of Hatcher, Judge Hatcher. Now, she's been here for 2 weeks. Nobody has said anything. No civil rights leadership or et cetera has reached out to her, if you will. She will have to obtain the association of a white attorney because she does not have a license. She has a law degree and all that, but she does not have a license to practice law in the state of Minnesota. Okay? So hopefully answered those two specific questions. The medical examiner's report, yeah, it was done. The number of times that Mr. Blevins was shot, perhaps that we'll hold that information back until a later time and date. And the cameras, no one has a clue on when they will be made available.
Okay, well, I think there was a question, too, about was there or was there not a gun? Did Mr. Blevins actually have a gun?
There was a statement given by a person who was with him at the time that the police confronted him as he sat on a curb talking with her and her daughter. This was his significant other and one of his children. She said that he had a gun. People didn't pay any attention to it because they were busy hollering and screaming. She said that he had a gun. I have reason to believe, I'll say it like this, I have reason to believe that the gun was empty. But the other issue that is at play that no one is bothering to touch except this journalist is that the two white officers, Schmidt and Kelly, they initially indicated in the presence of a couple of witnesses, if you will, they thought that this African-American, now deceased, was holding hostage a white woman and her child. And that was the driving force behind their activities. And God help us if they, in fact, did shoot him at least 14 times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I also had a question for you about because it's kind of – we haven't been getting any information down here about Muhammad Noor. And what's the status of that right now?
Muhammad Noor has two of the shrewdest attorneys that you want to see. You know, he never gave a statement last year. He declined to give a statement, which is his right. He ultimately was charged, if you will, by the county attorney, not by a grand jury. And he made a court appearance a couple months ago. He entered a not guilty, per se. And, in fact, in late September, he is to make his second appearance. My take is that Muhammad Noor will not go on trial for another year. And he has given no statement. He has given no statement, as the law allows him that protection. He has given no statement, and so what has basically happened, and the same thing that's getting ready to happen to the Blevins case, is that it is frozen in time. Both cases are frozen in time. The media has nothing to write about, if you will. But it's the kind of thing that creates the kind of tensions that we have. But we, you know, we have a community that is basically locked out of the process.
And I kind of have a question for both you and Mr. Allen. Kind of both being black men, and if you're approached by a police officer or stopped by one, I don't want to say fearful, but what's going through your mind?
That's interesting. Mr. Allen, you want to take that first and I'll follow up?
Oh, sure. Not less than 30 days ago, I was stopped St. Anthony, not too far from my home in St. Paul, and with the two kids in the back of the car, a 5 and 7 year old. And I put my hands on the wheel, mane calm, wound down the window. And I said, "Well, what did you pull me over for?" He says, "Not wearing a seatbelt." I says, "You see, I didn't move, and my seatbelt is on. I have an SUV. I sit up high, and you can see the belt come from the window side across me." And he looked. He looked in, and he looked at the kids in the back, and he says, "Okay." He says, "Well, this time, well, make sure you always wear your seatbelt." But these police officers, I know for a fact, if you're driving something they think you're not supposed to drive or have, and they have a cup of coffee or a free time, they will pull you over. Just it's profiling. It's blatant profiling. There was no reason at all whatsoever to pull me over for that. Or the time I got pulled over and they said my license plate light was out. And after they left, I got out and I looked, and my license plate was lit up. You know, they didn't give me a ticket or anything, but I'm like, what's going on here? What goes through my mind is like, I haven't done anything illegal. I don't have any warrants. There's no need for this police officer to even be screwing with me. But I'm not going to take him to the point where he takes out a weapon and shoots me in front of my children and throws a gun in the car. You know, so I'm going to remain calm and respectful. So that's my take on it. And everybody's not
that
lucky.
That's interesting, and this is the first time that I've heard Mr. Allen indicate that 30 days ago that he was stopped time in America or in Minnesota, because I'll be doggone, and I've not discussed this with Mr. Allen, about the same time, about 30 days ago. In fact, it was the day before the death of Mr. Blevins. I was leaving a golf course. You know, I'm a black man that plays golf. I drive an old car also in the municipality of Plymouth, Minnesota. And I saw the Plymouth officer, white officer, riding by himself, go by me. I saw him look. I know what that's about. I made my turn going in the opposite direction. Maybe within 2.5 miles, I saw a SUV approaching me at a very rapid speed. Actually followed me into another jurisdiction, pulled me over. And because I'm, fairly well trained and understand the law, when he came up to the car, he had his hand on his weapon, and so, he, as Mr. Allen has just said, I made sure that I was as respectful and et cetera. And, but you do have this feeling in the pit of your stomach, my God, is this it? And I asked him a question, which I ask all police, because I, as a black man, get stopped somewhat frequently, if you will, far beyond what would happen to a Caucasian in my age group. I'm 79. And I asked him what his PC was, probable cause. And
he looked at me as if, you know, maybe I should die kind of thing. I mean, you know, and he couldn't think of anything. And then I said, well, also, I said, you know, let me ask you a second time. I mean, why are you stopping me? Okay. He said, you look suspicious. Now, that is not an appropriate response. Even in Mississippi or Minnesota, you know, you asked an officer what is the legal question, what was your probable cause. And I determined that this was an angry white man, an angry Plymouth police officer, if you will. And I did have concern, you know, it was beginning to be this hour. It was around, in fact, 8:30, if you will. And I just said, let me just chill. Play it cool. He finally thought up a reason to give me a ticket, if you will. It didn't have anything to do with probable cause that he could have known anything about, and that ticket has been dismissed. Oops. But to your question, sir, from 816, you know, it also may explain some of the tension that I understand you have, where African Americans and police have been engaged in some real violence. Gun battles here in the last couple of weeks, including two white deputies shot and killed in Kansas City, Kansas, and three white police officers shot and wounded just this past Sunday. But it goes back to what Mr. Nelson and others were saying on this program. Mr. Allen was talking about it a week ago, if you will, on this program. Any black person that tries to tell you that they don't have a sense of anxiety and maybe a sense of fear are telling you a lie. When you see those lights, buddy, and when you see Officer Goodfellow coming up to your automobile, all you can do is hope for the best, and do everything that is appropriate and what you think to be correct so that you can stay here, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to listen to you off the air then.
All right, thank you, sir.
I appreciate it.
Thank
you. Okay,
I appreciate
it.
Thank you for asking.
All right.
Go ahead, Mr. Allen. We got some more people holding, et cetera. Go ahead.
Yeah, we're still live with Mr. Nelson, who's back there, and we don't have any more people. We do have people in the queue listening, and we'd like to thank you for listening. The number, first time giving it out, but we still have a lot of calls, 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Mr. Eric, I got to ask you a question, and Jamar can chime in. Recently, a white female daycare worker was given probation for trying to hang a kid. Okay? And I'm a little bit troubled by that because, Mr. Edwards, you know my mother ran a couple daycare centers and a lot troubled. And I couldn't just fathom someone trying to hang a child and not being punished.
Right.
And I imagine, you know, I have cousins that run daycares now that my mom helped them open back in the day, and they're very doing very well. And if one of them got into that situation where they were a little upset, or someone else in the St. Paul, Minneapolis, wherever, I mean, I think the circumstances would be a lot different than they were for this lady, given probation for 10 years and some monitoring and things like that. Of course, her income is crushed because she'll never have a daycare license again. But other than that, you know, I was a little bit troubled by that, as well as the teenage white guy that was shot in his home out there in the western suburbs because he was arguing with his mom. And those two issues kind of came to light because I was a little bit bothered by both of them. Number one, they're two separate issues, but, you know, one, I figured, like, okay, that's not right. You know, because if this was a black woman in Minnesota, she would have been under the jail. And then you have this young white kid. And we didn't hear very much about any protests, anybody being upset, not even in the white community. And based on the circumstances, from what I read, from what some bloggers had written about it, and from what his high school team, it seems like this situation could be handled differently. This goes back to me with 5 minutes, 51 seconds remaining. Do the police need to be retrained?
Yes, do they
I
need
think
to be
they do.
Military?
I'm glad you let me
okay.
deal with this
go ahead,
and respond. Mr. Allen is one that has also been a monitor for the Department of Justice, if you will. I find it rather interesting, and you have to applaud Mayor Melvin Carter in St. Paul, that he has brought former Chief Finney in to take a look. And I was going to try to find a way to mention it when we were talking to the last caller from outstate, because one of the things that is happening in St. Paul is that there is a epidemic of police dogs biting people of color, and I mean biting them very badly. And, in fact, in one case that happened 2 years ago, African-American gentleman was awarded $2 million by the city of St. Paul. We have an African-American woman that's going to be a grandmother, in fact, that's going to be awarded probably about $2 million being bit by the dog. We have a couple of others, if you will. And I was glad to see former Chief Finney be brought in to begin the retraining and et cetera. But here's the thing. We were doing that here in Minneapolis starting in 2013 because we had not completed our responsibilities for the Department of Justice's requirements because of complaints that went back to the formation of the Police Community Relations Council, if you will, PCRC. And so in 2013, then Chief Janae Harto asked the Department of Justice, and particularly the Office of Justice Programs, OJP, to allow the city to engage in a completion of its responsibilities. The Reverend Jerry McAfee has talked about it quite a bit, and he's absolutely on point. There were things that were not completed. It even after that took another almost 3 years to get things completed, if you will. But retraining, retooling, and et cetera, I think that you, Mr. Nelson, and anybody else out there would agree, seems to be a almost mandatory situation with a number of police departments, not only Minneapolis, St. Paul, Falcon Heights, St. Anthony, Chanhassen, Carver County, you know what I'm saying, where I'm going, particularly in that there are so many fatalities. I just don't understand the need to have shot and killed that young man in Chanhassen, if you will, who was a student at Minnetonka High School, apparently well respected. And I noticed, by the way, that he had some black friends because one of his fellow students, African American, and et cetera. I think that it's something that needs to happen. There needs to be an addressing. But we were talking about this 3 or 4 years ago. If Mr. Nelson is still with us, right, Mr. Nelson, we were talking about this and the need for reform. It began, if you will, but there were a lot of people that didn't see it to be important, and they don't seem to see it to be important unless there is a controversy, a tragedy, and et cetera, and there's some money to be had. Okay, so, and by the way, to the one caller, I don't get paid by anybody, okay? I draw Social Security, and I worked hard for that.
Yeah, it's very interesting, you guys, Mr. Edwards and Mr. Nelson, because I'm seeing these responses. Two young boys, Somali boys,
yes.
at the Minnehaha yes. Park. It's like, you know, to one extent, I understand. Because I deal with some kids that age every day throughout
right.
the school year. And if I was a police officer and if I heard some of the things that they say to adults, you know, pulling a gun is not the way to treat anybody. But pulling a gun will stop that extra bravado and hyperbole that's coming out of their mouth, okay, if that was the case. And in this case, you know, they were wrongly reported by someone anonymously, from what I understand, that they were doing something out there in the park. Other
being
you know,
black.
And that's what happened. Yeah, and we have an epidemic of folks calling the police on black barbecuing. I watched the video. I know, I think Mr. Nelson might have seen this.
Yep.
There's a video online where a brother was barbecuing in his yard. The neighbor across
in
the street called the police about the smoke and the smell, and they sent someone out actually to deal with the brother and Ryan Pickett.
I said, what? I said, this is nonsense.
But see, the thing is, Mr. Everson and Mr. Nelson, also, this goes back to the policy and the policymakers. The policymakers don't look like us. We're not in that, city council room. We're not in that legislature. We're not doing anything. And once we got black people in the we have black people in the legislature, but they drink the Kool-Aid as soon as they get in there. And
Mr. Allen, they don't have the votes, unfortunately. Someone said just a couple of days ago that there needs to be more proportional representation as it pertains to all of these government chambers, if you will, in other words, legislature, federal, state, and et cetera. But it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen in modern history, if you will. Your point, I maintain your point, is well taken and well made. And let me just not brush off the woman who was attempting to hang a child, because if it had not been for the father of another child, that child would have died that day.
Absolutely.
That morning.
Absolutely.
The one that came in and pulled the child out. But I noticed that they never told us the race of that child. Did you ever remember that?
No.
They never told
us
the race.
No, they never said.
They did not.
Never said.
They did not. We can only imagine that it was a black child, unfortunately. And here's the other thing. You guys are both hitting it on the nail on the head, which is why I love the program. And, if this circumstances had been a black woman, a sister would have never gotten no 10 years of probation. She'd had 10 years or a life imprisonment sentence. That's attempted murder that this Russian, whatever she was, white lady, got away with, and it's unfathomable that it would happen to one of our sisters in the community, because we know that it wouldn't.
Yes.
We are now off the air and just streaming, so this can only be heard. This section now that we're talking can only be heard on the podcast. And And so, we can go ahead and wrap it up, and so that people can get to the podcast.
Let's do that. Mr. Nelson, appreciate you spending some time with us.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you. Chiming in. Appreciate you. Peace out.
All right.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Thank you. Here we go.
All right, Mr. Allen, whatever it is, take us home. We're out.